Back once again with you Thursday, November 16th, 2023, on Connecticut Today. We checked in for the latest from Olney and Bridgeport blogger Lenny Grimaldi on the city's continuing election controversy and University of New Haven senior lecturer of national security, Professor Robert Sanders, analyzed the current Israel-Hamas war. So I go to the webpage here, onlyinbridgeport.com, and I see there's a big, look at this. A big fundraiser here coming up. Gather Tap and Tavern, 155 State Street, Bridgeport, coming up Friday, 5 to 7, so I can't make the first hour. Minimum contribution, $50. Maximum, $2,000. I don't know. Lenny Grimaldi is here. Lenny, I'm going to have to skip the $2,000 level. I don't know about you, but I got to. I have to skip that, right?
That's because you can do 5K. everyone knows that. And maybe we should do a remote. Maybe we do a remote.
It would be great.
Comedy club.
You and I hosting the show from there. Oh, my God. Would that be great?
No one will be the same again.
No, and the material rights itself. Lenny, January 23rd, Lenny, it's going to be, primary round two, one-on-one. Just the way we had Ali Frazier, 1, 2, and 3. Here comes Ghanem Gomes, 3, right?
Could be 4.
Yeah, my God.
This is going down in history as the mayoral race of winter, spring, summer, and fall.
That's right.
All you have to do is fall. So we started in September, Uncle Paulie. We started in September. There was a primary that segued into fall, the general election.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's going to bleed into winter.
Oh, my God.
And it could go into the spring 2024. Yes, indeed.
Wow. Just the way what was that song? Winter, spring, summer, or fall.
Carole King is going to do
Carole
a concert.
Carole King. Yes. Thank you. Oh, man. All right. So, Lenny, how does this stack out? I mean, there's a weather aspect to this. There's the absentee aspect.
Yeah.
I guess they're still fundraising. What are you hearing so far, at least about round three?
Yes, yes, and yes. Fire up the snowplows. So here's what's being proposed before Judge Clark, who ruled for a new Democratic primary because of absentee ballot, irregularities. So it looks like there's going to be another Democratic primary on January 23rd.
Mm-hmm.
It means like over 2 months. So this is like a full scheduled election cycle,
yeah,
rather than a shotgun compressed cycle.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of things that the judge has to review and sign off on. You know, and I mentioned it could be 4. Because the Secretary of State's office position right now, at least today, is that no matter who wins this redo primary, it has to be another general election. This
oh,
is a new
really?
Win. Correct, yes. Yes. And so the spokesperson, and I'll quote,
yeah,
for the Secretary of State, says the general election is required to be held if there is more than one candidate. The only way it isn't required to be held as if every general election candidate but one has withdrawn. That's their. This is all new or charted territory. It's all new, right? And so this is being presented to the judge for the review. This, I think, is probably going to be appealed if it doesn't go, if Joe Gannon wins the redo. I mean, I'm sure that he's going to appeal it and let the Supremes figure it out. You know, John Gomes' lawyer, who's a terrific election lawyer, Bill Bloss, has said from day one, if Joe Gannon wins the redo, he's mayor again, right? And if Gomes had won last week, which Gannon won by like 175 votes,
yeah,
if Gomes had won, he'd be mayor. There'd be no need for a redo. So that has always – Bloss has been very, very consistent
mm-hmm.
on that point. So have the attorneys for the city of Bridgeport on that point. The Secretary of State has kind of tossed this grenade into it, right?
Wow.
And so the judge is going to have to look at this and figure it out. And probably it depends what Judge Clark decides. And it's going to be, you know, potentially could be appealed and go to the Supreme. So this is a new wrinkle that the lawyers are navigating in this process.
So just to make sure people understand this, Lenny, you're saying the Secretary of the State, Stephanie Thomas, her office, and I would guess she's consulting legal counsel there, Lenny, but she is saying there, in her mind or in their mind, there should be a fourth round in this no matter what happens in the primary redo?
Yes.
Wow.
Rock and roll, chaos, baby. Keeps us in business. Keeps me off the unemployment lines. Yeah, it's a really strange wrinkle to this whole thing that the judge is going to have to sort out, and maybe even the Supremes. So, this is it just, you know, the beat goes on, you know.
You're going old school now. Drums keep pounding a rhythm to the brain, Lenny.
Yeah, yes, yes. And now you know why I drink, okay? But there is going to be. Here's what we think.
Yeah.
So the judge still have to sign off. So the parties have gotten together, the campaign camps, for Mayor Joe Ganim and John Gomes, and the lawyers decided, okay, we think January 23rd is acceptable. The Gomes camp really wanted December to limit the time of absentee ballot availability.
Mm-hmm.
But the time clock just didn't work with the holidays and so on, right? So they decided, okay, January 23rd. So we got over a couple of months. That is likely just to go forward, assume the judge signs off on it, and he probably will, according to the lawyers. And then it'll be January 23rd. And again, I mean, weather could very well come into play, unless we have, you know, the January thaw, right?
Mm.
But you could have, who knows, there could be a snowstorm. There could be, it could be, you know, 0 degrees, because January is the worst weather month. With snow and cold, you know, February along, early February anyways, along with it. But it's definitely a new way of trying to drag people to the polls. So, again, ballots will be very, very critical in this process. And who knows? Let's suppose it's a day of 10 or 15 degrees on January 23rd. You know, what is going to be the motivation for people to go out?
Right. Jeez.
Right? On both sides.
Wow.
You know, so it's this one's a really screwy wrap.
And Lenny, you talk about the complete cycle here. So we're going to have this supposed election monitor here. So if January 23rd is eventually agreed to as at least the date for round three, when do the absentee applications become available? Do we know that?
Yeah, that's a really great question. Yes, very pointy question, which is also going to be debated, because the Secretary of State's office is kind of putting its thumb on the scale here, saying, okay, we want to limit that time where they're accessible, right? And so
they're saying
ballot applications will be available. I'm trying to find a date. Forgive me.
All right.
I'm going to find it.
That's all right. You can text me later if you can't find it. That's all right.
Right.
Yeah.
So what they're saying is absentee ballots will be available like 3.5 weeks out.
Okay.
Okay? And the applications just 2 or 3 days before. Whereas normally in a cycle, you'd be dumping right now absentee ballots.
Oh, yeah.
Right? They want to limit that. And so that is something that's being debated right now amongst the lawyers. To say no, because you're disenfranchising people if they can't put their ballots in, ballot application.
Yeah, sure.
The audience. There's a distinction between application comes first. You fill that out. It's filed with the town clerk's office. Town clerk sends out the actual absentee ballot. So the lawyers are going back and forth on this, and this is something that Judge Clark's going to have to sort out. The timeline for making absentee ballot applications available. The Secretary of State wants to condense that process.
Wow.
And you're going to have that's going to be a battle between the lawyers for the judge to sort out.
Man, a couple of more things, Lenny, before we wrap up. Number one, I know Jesse Waters sent his sent one of his guys out there to talk to the people in Bridgeport. No microphone, no Fox microphone in front for you. I was hoping you would pop up there. Not happening.
Yeah, I did see Jesse the fly swatter. And so you asked me, why don't I do these shows?
Yeah.
I don't like doing these shows because it's like they go after the low-hanging fruit and take out their machete, right? And I look at this stuff, and I create this narrative just for this knee-jerk, you know, ratings kind of thing. But, I did see that. the stalking of Wanda Jeter, that's exactly what it was. But that's why I don't do these shows.
Okay.
I just do your show.
Okay. That's it. And finally, your old boss, we have to wind up with him. His poll numbers are, if not solidifying, actually inching up a little. Like, two more polls this week, Jesse. And this marketing firm out of England that's doing all this modeling saying, if it was held today, and I know it's not, he may win again. Can you imagine?
I don't think any of these poll numbers are going to change. Unless he's convicted, that could move it.
Mm-hmm.
And it depends, I guess, there's four cases. And it depends what case, right? And so I don't get really caught up in the national polls for president because we don't pick our president that way.
Yeah.
I look at the battleground states, and right now Trump's polling pretty good in the battleground states. So if there's a conviction or two along the way, and he's got the resources to appeal. Does it give a Republican some opening? Does, you know, one of the Republican closest challengers make the case the guy still can't win a general election? That could change it, but right now, it's strange.
You think?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Lenny, always good to talk to you. Lenny Grimaldi, only at Bridgeport.com. Lenny, take care. Have a good weekend.
Okay, you too. Thanks a lot.
All right, bye-bye. There you go. Oh, man, oh, man. So, yeah, think about it. In this round three that I guess is tentatively going to be January 23rd, think about it. The absentee ballot thing could be even more critical. I mean, how many, not just elderly people, but how many folk are going to say, oh, you know what, I'm going to vote absentee now because how do I know it won't be snowing or icing sideways on January 23rd? Good God. Stay tuned. All right, I can sit here and I can flap my gums all you people want about what's going on in the Middle East, but I effort to bring on experts here who can really give us a story of what people are thinking, what the next moves may be. A return visit from Professor Robert Sanders. He is a professor and lecturer of national security, University of New Haven, retired Navy Judge Advocate General's Corps Captain, legal and national security educator. He has also served as a staff attorney and a legislative director working with the U.S. Senate and the U.S. House. Professor Sanders, hi, it's Paul again. Good to have you back. How are you?
I'm good, Paul. How about yourself?
I'm doing very well, and thank you for taking the time. We appreciate it. Well, it's been several weeks, I think about a month and change since we talked. Unfortunately, the violence continues. So give me your macro look here, Professor, at what we're looking at here and what you think the present situation dictates.
Well, we're still looking at large potential violations of international law by both obviously Hamas for their initial murders of innocents, and now by Israel by attacking what the world is now looking at and considering to be non-military objects, which would be civilian objects, which would be immune from attack. Israel is trying to justify with some support from the United States by saying that these non-military objects, these civilian objects, hospitals, etc., have been turned into military objects by Hamas and their use. And they've tried to prove that through videos that were presented yesterday. Skeptical people have looked at the videos and said, well, I can't tell for sure whether or not this is real in time or staged or otherwise. And at this point, we don't know whether or not Israel is, in fact, a violator of human rights in the manner that people think they are, or is Israel right in following down this road, which it has an obligation to protect its citizens, and it has a right to protect its citizens after being wrongfully attacked by Hamas?
There's this constant call, Professor, for a ceasefire here, one that many in Israel are pushing back against, and even many in Congress and both sides of the aisle are pushing back against. Do you have any doubts, though, that there are talks, obviously, perhaps maybe, going on behind the scenes, that while certain things are said for public consumption, there are active talks going on to try and dial this back, maybe in exchange for some of the hostages?
I hope there are. I know the United States has been pushing for that. They've been using an ally of ours, the Qataris, who've been very engaged over the last half decade, particularly since President Biden came into office, in trying to help the United States in areas where we don't normally have access and connections. Lots of times in the Arab world and in now what we call the Middle East, which was originally Northeast Africa.
Mm-hmm. Looking at this situation now, Professor, the elephant in the room still seems to be, no matter who you talk to, Iran, and we get these stories usually almost weekly now about Iranian influence, Iranian funding and training. How does that, and to what extent does that complicate the situation here, even though the U.S., we've moved, what now, two carrier strike groups in the area, kind of a warning, and I believe a nuclear submarine as well, as a warning to Iran. So it seems at least we've issued a pretty stern warning here. But what might this portend?
Well, you know, Iran has been a purveyor of terrorism around the world for many, many years. They have been a supporter of Hezbollah as well as Hamas. What the larger concern is a direct conflict between U.S. forces and Iranian forces. Right now, there are surrogates for Iran who are attacking American forces in Iraq and in Syria. If, in fact, it is shown that it is not surrogates but actual IRG, Republican National Guard, forces that are engaging with American forces, that would change the picture completely, because the United States would be forced to deal with Iran directly, and not with these surrogates that are on the battlefield right now. Iran has been supporting Hamas. They say they weren't directly involved in this attack, but over the years, the funding and training that they've given to Hamas and Hezbollah has allowed them to reach a level that they could attack in this manner.
Something you mentioned a couple of moments ago, Professor, is the aspect of a two-state solution, which has been kind of this goal for decades now. And I was watching a discussion on that the other day on one of the news channels, and somebody made a very interesting point. They said, well, you can wish for that all you want, but Hamas has been against that, and they likely will not okay that, even bigfooting or overstepping or stepping into, if you will, what the Palestinian Authority wants. Is that a major problem here?
Well, Hamas, in its charter, says that it is not for a two-state solution. Their charter says that they are there to eradicate Israel, mm-hmm, and to kill Jews, frankly. However, if you go all the way back to when this situation really began, which is at the end of World War I, when the Balfour Declaration was made, the Balfour Declaration was driving toward a two-state solution. Mm-hmm. The land that England, Great Britain, made available to Jews emigrating to Palestine were lands that were going to be given to them and that were not going to affect the existing population, i.e. the Palestinians. Mm-hmm. That was what the Balfour Declaration said. And along with that, ultimately, Jerusalem would have been an international city. But that all failed. And we've been trying to get that to come to life ever since. But you have Arab states in the beginning, Hamas and terrorist organizations now who are radically opposed to the continued existence of Israel and anything that would look like a two-state solution.
You know, Professor, attitudes tend to change over the years and, you know, over the decades, over generations. Is it your sense in studying this area that if, let's say, for some reason Hamas backed down, or if Hamas, for example, and Hezbollah didn't exist, is there a shot here for a true peaceful coexistence of a Palestinian governed state right next to Israel? I guess what I'm asking here is, are the hardliners the ones that are keeping this going over and above the fact that probably, I'm guessing here, I could be wrong, the garden variety everyday Israeli could coexist with the garden variety Palestinian living in Gaza? Or am I wrong?
No, you're right on that last point, because these garden variety people, Palestinians and Israelis, want to do the same things that everybody else wants to do. They want to love their family, raise their kids, do their job, enjoy their life, have fun with their neighbors, practice their religion, mm-hmm. all of those things that we consider to be normal activities of life. They want to do that. But as you mentioned, hardliners. Well, there's hardliners on both sides.
Sure.
So the hardliners in the Arab world or in Hamas or Hezbollah or any other organization like them, and there are several others, don't want that to happen. And there are people in the Jewish community, particularly those who push these settlements in and around the West Bank, that actually are displacing today and have in the recent future, displaced Palestinians, which again continues to fan the flames of the situation and doesn't allow that average person you just talked about to be front and center and a priority.
Next step here, Professor, I know that's a hard crystal ball to look into, but the Israelis don't seem to be backing off. They seem to want to, at least outwardly in the statements here, do what they have been unable to do. And I don't know whether that's possible, is to completely uproot Hamas. They keep discovering these, you know, hundreds of miles of tunnels here. My sense is this doesn't end anytime soon. But what do you think?
Well, unfortunately, I have to agree with you. But here we are in this scenario. Israel was attacked. Israel, the government, the state of Israel has an obligation and a right to defend its people. All stop. However, that defense of its people against the attacker has the propensity to create collateral damage. That collateral damage is actually dead human beings mm-hmm. who are not in the fight. There's a way to look at this in the international legal sphere is necessity and proportionality and distinction. So Hamas should be distinguishing itself from innocent Gazians and other Palestinians. Israel should be responding as necessary to defend itself, and it should do that in a way that is proportional to gaining the end state it desires, or that the world says is an appropriate end state to get to. The problem right now is that the world looks at what Israel is doing as being not proportional to, one, the attack that they suffered. 1,400 innocent Israelis were murdered. Mm-hmm. Over 3,000 innocent children who are Palestinian are also dead. So when you start to look at proportionality, the world is having a problem with that. And I'm not sure how that gets solved. Israel's in a hard place. They understand that if they don't remove as much of Hamas as possible it will just grow back. But Israel also has to decide that regarding Hamas growing back, what are the things that make Hamas viable to that either the person who's radicalized or the person who stands by and doesn't speak up and say, radicalized, hey, don't vote for that. And part of getting Israel to say, you know, we have been violating the rights of Palestinians for many, many years. We're going to stop doing that. That doesn't justify murdering Israelis. It never has and it never can. But there has to be steps in both directions.
Tough situation. Senior Lecturer of National Security at the University of New Haven, Professor Robert Sanders. Professor, thank you. We appreciate it. We'll talk down the road. Thank you for your time. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome, Bob.
Appreciate Bye-bye. It. Thanks. Professor Robert Sanders, Senior Lecturer, National Security at the University of New Haven. Tough situation, folks. And it's not going to get better anytime soon, tragically.